being deployed by the police in the kinds of raids that we saw happen in Georgia are happening every day in America.
Kara Danska, we want to thank you very much for being with us. Senior counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union, author of the new report, The War Comes Home, The Excessive Militarization of American Policing. We'll link to it at democracynow.org. And that does it for our broadcast today. A fond farewell to Democracy Now! Video fellow Messiah Rhodes, who's worked with us for the past year. He just got back.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Please stay tuned for Positively Revolting Talk Radio. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Oregon State Fair. Dia de la Familia inviting you and your family to come out on Sunday, August 31st in Salem. A celebration of Latino culture, Dia de la Familia includes Latin music, food, mariachi, ballet folklorio, face painting, and the Chemeketa Community College women's soccer team at the Kids Kick Camp.
Blow up if you don't let the common man and common woman and the black man and woman get there.
And yo, we got to shut them down. If you don't want to go along with the program, you know what I'm saying? We got to shut you down.
Oh, what time it is?
I bet, girl, man. You know what time it is? It's really time to get to this commercial. We'll be right back.
Yeah, okay, Public Enemy. Yeah, you know, this is KBOO, 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, Oregon. This is a show normally known as Positively Revolting. My name is Joe Uris. I'm sitting in for the two excellent, excellent heroes of this show, or heroines of the show, Anna Haynes and Lynn Mullick, who will be back next week, back with a strong feminist perspective in talk radio. Typically, excellent stuff at KBOO. But right now, I want to remind you, you can call us at 231-8187. And I'm not letting go. I'm going to talk again about Ferguson. And I'm going to talk again. And several people said, how come you're calling it murder? How come you're calling it murder? There's been no grand jury. There's been no trial. There's been no... What's the matter with you? You're not being fair. In fact, I think there were several very angry calls. And I don't think last week I was clear enough on this question of why I think it's murder and what that means. So I'm going to revisit Ferguson, and I'm going to give you some statistical evidence of what goes on in that town, which helps to explain the outrage, not to mention the crime. And I do believe it is a crime, whether or not a grand jury in that particular region is willing to indict and whether that DA is willing to follow up in Ferguson, and why I think the death of Michael Brown is, in fact, a murder. So, you know, hang on. Call me up, argue with me, agree with me, make some points. I'm eager to hear from you. But I can't let it go. I can't let it go because it's so disturbing and so clear. And the first thing I want to say is that we now have, through the New York Times research, clear evidence that in Ferguson, this is amazing, the number of people in Ferguson who are issued arrest warrants is, and the consequence is there is more than 1,100 arrest warrants issued each year per 1,000 residents. Now, there's, you know, and this is a town that's largely African American. So there's a question here. Well, are the African-American community, are the people of Ferguson peculiarly prone to crime, therefore a lot of arrest warrants? That would be an explanation. And yet, it doesn't really make sense. What it seems to be is that when social control mechanisms in Ferguson are applied by the police, they're applied differentially to people who are black. And it seems clear that even the most petty offenses result in the issuing of arrest warrants. And there's an enormous income to the city, the little city of Ferguson, from the process of ticketing. We have evidence, anecdotal but also statistical, that in fact Ferguson has the highest rate, the unbelievably highest rate in the whole of Missouri, of these warrants. Now, that's the background for the whole anger in Ferguson. It wasn't just, and I want to be clear about this, it wasn't just the death of Michael Brown. It was so much oppression by a police department that seems so unprofessional that it becomes incredibly oppressive. So, that's important. That's something for you to all consider, all ponder. All right. Now, on the case of the shooting and why I say it's murder, I want to lay this out really simply. We don't know whether Michael Brown stole cigars. We do know that the officer who we encountered in the street did not know that he had stolen cigars, and that's important. We do know that there was an encounter which involved some kind of altercation where Michael Brown was pulled to or into the police vehicle. We do know that Michael Brown, that there probably was a shot or two fired, that Michael Brown then walked down the street. And we do know now that he was shot innumerable times. We actually now have not only videotape of what happened, but an audio tape, which is a coincidental event. The guy was talking on the phone to a friend, and he didn't even realize what he'd picked up. But you hear a series of shots, then a pause, then another shot, then more shots. And we know from the autopsy that Michael Brown's probably lethal shots were fired in such a manner that he was falling forward down onto the ground, and that he was shot in the head. Okay, it's clear that there could have been tasing. There could have been any number of things, could have called for backup. A lot of things could have happened that didn't happen. But beyond that, the number of shots is excessive, and the pausing between when the subject is already wounded is excessive. And it is, from any point of view, murder. There's no other possible interpretation. Now, what will happen in the course of the examination of this through the legal system in Missouri is very interesting. Turns out Missouri law allows a police officer in the course of an arrest to shoot somebody. That's it. Shoot somebody. So, you know, it could very well be that there will be no indictment. It could very well be that the police officer involved will walk. It could very well be that the right-wing kind of anger that is heard here and there, most of it directed, though never acknowledged to be such, in a racist way, will be successful. That could well happen. Then there'll be a civil rights case from the federal government. That's a different case entirely, and we'll see what happens with that. I'm bringing this up because it is not isolated. As one begins to examine statistical evidence of the treatment of African Americans by police departments all over the country, not just in a border state like Missouri, not just in the South, not just in Chicago, not just in California, not just in New York, where a man is killed with a chokehold, it becomes clear that there is a perception, apparently, that African Americans are worthy of killing. Worthy of killing. This is extremely disturbing. It's not a surprise, unfortunately, but here is increasing evidence of this. And the fact of the matter is that it becomes a very divisive issue in a society where people kind of break down into different groups. There are people who say the police should have these powers. There are people who say the police need all these magnificent weapons that are given to them by the Defense Department. There are people who say that Michael Brown was a bad dude and that he was walking in the middle of the street and that's not allowable, and therefore he should have died when he didn't obey a police officer. What I say is that this is an irrational, at best, response to an unruly behavior by an 18-year-old. At best, But beyond that, there's an element here that clearly is murderous. And there is, whether or not an indictment ends up happening by Missouri law, or whether or not there is a trial, or whatever happens, from my perspective, when a person is walking away from a policeman, not apparently obeying an order to stop, if the such order was ever given, and is shot innumerable times beyond the amount of shots it would take to bring that person down, it's murder. It's murder. And it's not tolerable. And the outrage, the upsetness, the anger, which spread through all of the United States, and not just among African Americans, reflects a real disenchantment with law enforcement. And it's very dangerous from a conservative perspective. If your expectation of how you will be treated by the police is such that you have a feeling of desperation and anger and a sense of injustice inherent in the behavior that's happening from the law enforcement side, you're going to behave in a way that is going to increase the potential for violence. This is really important. When you have Missouri law exonerating anyone who's a law enforcement officer who's trying to make an arrest and ends up shooting people, when you have a system where law enforcement serves warrants for ordinary crimes using paramilitary technologies, flashbang grenades, all kinds of military devices, you have a potential for enormous violence and enormous alienation. This is serious. It is counter to respect for law, which, if you're conservative, is an important quality, and it is counter to fairness, whether you're conservative or liberal or leftist or rightist, whatever. It's really, really serious. And I think there is actually one of several solutions that have been proposed now and have been discussed even on mainstream media. One of those is to put video cameras on all officers and on their vehicles. This will be a fair move because people who claim they were abused by the police will have a video of what they claim to have been abusive. It will protect the police in that sense, and it will protect the victims of police inappropriate behavior. So, and it's only the police, and it's only for the purpose of looking at situations of encounters with people. It's a fair measure. It's one of the things that could be done with the technologies of today that could make an enormous difference in both police behavior and in the behavior of people who are alleged miscreants. It turns out in cities where the cameras have been put on officers, the amount of violent crime, the amount of complaints, the amount of terrible things that happen are seriously reduced. So let's just remember. Video cams on officers and on their vehicles will reduce charges of police brutality. It will reduce behavior by police that can lead to those charges. This is something that's really serious and really needs to be paid attention to. Meanwhile, we have the police running around with essentially tactical weapons designed for war. All of this creates the impression, and I'm afraid rightly so, that African-American communities are occupied by an occupying army of police who are largely Caucasian. All right? I wanted to make that clear because several people said, well, you really didn't explain why you're calling it murder. I call it murder. If you disagree or you agree, if you want to make a comment on this subject, this is the opportunity here on KBOO. 231-8187. Take the time. Let's have a conversation on this. Last week, I got several angry male callers on this subject. One of them identified himself as a member of a family where there are police officers. And I want to emphasize something here because it's really important. This is not an attack on law enforcement per se. This is a comment on a process that has gone on in this country for a long, long time. And we all need to remember the history of the African-American community in the United States. And we all need to remember that that is not something that disappears from the consciousness of people because slavery ends. We have a period of time during Reconstruction and then post-Reconstruction when black people were essentially put in a segregated position. We have a civil rights struggle in the 1960s that created laws to protect the communities, but we also have a history statistically, that shows that there's a differential treatment of African Americans, and that in a town like Ferguson, it appears that their whole money sourcing comes from giving African Americans bench warrants and tickets. This is serious stuff. This is not the American way, assuming the American way is one of freedom, justice, and democracy. So, I want to hear from you, 231-8187.
Hello.
Terry, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
I wanted to thank you for all that you said as a righteous white brother.
Thank you.
I'm a sister originally from Philadelphia, born in 1952.
Oh, boy, Philadelphia.
And if you read Eyes on the Prize.
Yes.
29th and York is exactly where I'm from. And we were on Rachel Maddow's show, 100% black.
Yeah.
So, you know, I came from the serious badlands of this country.
Yeah, and I remember the attack in Philly where they burned out, what, a whole block.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I lived down the street from, they dropped a bomb on a house and moved. I lived not too far from that incident when it happened. I was deliberating whether I should put my things in a footlocker and throw them down the steps and run, or keep looking out the kitchen window to see which is going to happen first, the fire, are they going to stop it? But anyway, I called you because my disgust is what is going on with folks today with so much social media, mm-hmm. and they cannot connect with each other.
Mm-hmm. That is an irony, isn't it?
It's worse than irony. When I was participating in civil rights, I call myself a domestic soldier.
Mm-hmm.
When I was participating in civil rights, all we had was pencil, paper, and phones, and, you know, the coroner,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a church.
Mm-hmm.
And we got stuff done. These people have all these things, all these methods to speak to each other, and they are not speaking to each other. I don't have an iPhone. I have a landline. I don't need an iPhone right now.
Why, you Luddite.
Yeah, I know. I have a computer, a desktop computer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some people might say, well, lady, you don't have a life. No, when I look and see what little bit they're doing with all that they've got, I would say that there is an immersion of information that smothers their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because we could do something, Joe. Mm-hmm. We as citizens, we could, when I say do something, I mean get a handle on this situation by getting a handle on our finances. And the finances that we put the handle on, use that to control what we need to get done.
You know, I have a question for you. What do you think of the idea of putting video cams on all police officers and their vehicles?
That's a good idea, but the people themselves need a sense of empowerment. Back when I was in this country trying to get things done, the only time we got things done, and you look at the history books, was when that bus boycott happened, when people pulled their money together and stopped doing something, stopped supporting who wasn't supporting them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this country needs to do. People who want to do something need to use what worked before.
So you're saying organizing and cooperation and communication are the keys to building a movement like the movement that resulted in the Civil Rights Act.
Yes, getting together, sitting on dirt, tearing up property, walking down the street, marching in signs, that's not going to do it. You have to use the methods that worked before. I know we're angry. I'm so angry, I'm almost sick every day.
Mm.
You know, and my boyfriend is Irish, and I told him, you know, honey, I know when you signed up for me, I had no luggage. Now I feel like I have secret freight that I didn't know about, because I'm crying all the time. I'm so upset, wondering why my people won't get together and stop it with the baseball caps, the sports paraphernalia that they're wearing and buying. I'm not saying that the sports players is our fault. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying a lot of things having to do with corporation, we need to get those people to stop what they're doing and turn around and listen to us and say, yo, people, what do you want us to do for you?
No, I think your points are really good. I want to give others opportunity, and I do thank you for the praise.
Okay, will you be on this radio every week?
Oh, well, now here's the deal. I do a show with a friend, Abe Proctor, on Tuesday mornings from 8 to 9. This show returns back to the feminist perspectives of Ani Haynes and Lynn Mullock, and it's a good show on Fridays.
Okay.
So well, like if you want to catch me, it's Tuesdays.
I love your attitude. Where did you get it from? How did you turn out the way you did?
Oh, I... I don't know.
But you speak so enlightened. How can be? Are you from Portland?
I know. Well, I was born in New York. I grew up in Southern California.
I came
here to go to college, you know, and I did graduate school and blah blah blah. And I've been teaching for a long, long time, both American history and sociology. So I guess I get it from all of that plus a lot of encounters in life.
Well, I'm going to listen to the radio for you again. Would you, when I hang up, would you tell the audience where you're going to be so that I can support you?
Oh, sure. I'll do that.
All right. And have a great day. And thank you, my righteous white brother. Thank you. We need more of you out there.
Well, keep on keeping on, yeah?
All right, then. Bye-bye.
Well, take care. All right. A caller just asked. I want to remind people that Abe Proctor and I do a show from 8 to 9 here on KBOO. And since we have a moment for pointing that out, we have the best music programming in just underreported, as they say, the best music programming in the city. Absolutely. And we got the best public affairs and information and opinion of any station anywhere. And I am proud of that, and I am proud to be a volunteer here. So, and Annie Haynes and Lynn Mullick will be taking on a lot of issues on Fridays, and I'm just filling in for them because they got a very well-earned vacation. So, let's talk again. We're talking about what happened in Ferguson and why I said that what happened to Michael Brown was murder. 231-8187, Steve, you're on the air.
Yeah, keep on keeping on. You're doing great, or whatever. You know, you're a pitch man. You're a real good pitch man, my friend.
I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not.
Yeah, I hope they gave you the salary that...
Oh, no, nobody gets a salary here. We're all volunteers.
Oh, I thought they were quitting. Okay. But I know the money should be well spent, you know. In Homeland Security and the federal government, it's not well spent.
No.
They spent all the police... The Army was built a lot of equipment from General Dynamics and places in contract work to the tune of millions and millions of dollars more than they needed for Iraq and Afghanistan. And now they don't know what to do with it, so their Homeland Security is giving it away to the police. And that's creating a situation. Yesterday I had my Wendy's lunch, and a woman from Mexico came up who was an intelligence officer,
mm-hmm.
very attractive, and a real educated person,
mm-hmm.
staying in a hotel. And she said, the country's filling up with Latinos, Mexicans that want to stay here, but also they're getting those guns from the police on the black market because the higher-ups are able to sell them. See what I mean? Because
I don't know about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what she said. I mean, I asked a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
How you really get information is at Wendy's, you know.
Yeah, I don't. I gotta say, I don't do the fast food, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. Well, I have to because people are losing their money. I live off Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
The middle class is eroded. You know what's
mm-hmm.
happened to our country,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of the whole scheme. They want us to kill ourselves, and the drug situation is part of that. So it's really infested into the seam of things. And the young people don't speak out, and that's you asked it why, and they don't because they're desperate to hang on to their jobs and pay their rents and mortgages, and the taxes is going up while the pay is going down. Joe, there's a lot more to this than meets the eye.
Well, thank you very much for the call, man.
Thank you, sir.
Keep on working on stuff.
Pray for us.
Yeah, it never hurts to pray. Maybe better to get out there and organize. I think one of the biggest problems that we're seeing right now is that all that powerful organizing and effort that took place in the 60s and 70s has kind of faded away. And there's a minority of people who still get out there, struggle, get into the streets and so on. But we don't have a movement. We don't have a left wing in American politics anymore. There's nothing to ground resistance and no analysis to talk about what exactly is happening in the society today. 231-8187, Sam. Was that Sam? Sam! Are you there? No, Sam. Okay.
That people need to call in to their representatives, to their, you know, whoever they are, the city council people. This needs to get done. It's inevitable. Let's get it done sooner. And then the cops can be this is for them too. With the people that claim, you know, things that happened that didn't, this is extremely important.
You're talking about the video cam idea.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. No, I think it's very fair. I think there's nothing wrong with it. I think that
it's absolutely.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times that people do make claims, audacious claims, against the authorities that are not valid. On the other hand, there's plenty of times when the police are out of line, and the video cam solves that problem, because you can't argue with the facts.
No, we don't even need to talk much more about that. That needs to happen.
Okay.
And I just want to make a point about the social media thing that our woman friend said two people ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't connect, and we seem to be so upset with one another because of what we're reading online and all the time. We don't talk to each other. I just came from a job, or I am in a job,
mm-hmm.
Working with developmentally disabled people. The number one rule is turn the phones off when you get here. Nobody obeys it. Everybody that is supposed to be engaging developmentally disabled people all day long in life,
mm-hmm.
they are engaging themselves on the internet, and it's a problem. All right, that's all I got.
All right, thank you very much for the call, and I think the insight on the media question, on the fact that people have their phones on all the time, is really maybe more relevant than we realize. We're talking about Ferguson. We're talking about why I called the Michael Brown shooting a murder. And we really want to hear from you. And I made an emphasis. I really emphasize the statistical evidence of the police oppression of people in Ferguson. Francis, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I think video cams are a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that there's more to it than that. Of course, that's sort of after the fact.
Yeah, it is. It is after the fact.
I wish there was a way for the Portland Police Department or the City of Portland and any city in this country, really, to screen people who come onto the police force.
Screen them for what?
For their biases. For their...
I understand reactions. The concept, but how do you do that?
I don't know how you could do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But there isn't any now at all. That's not a criteria at all.
I think...
Racist.
Yeah, I think one of the problems.
Criteria.
Yeah.
Pardon?
I'm sorry. I think one of the problems basically is that there is an enormous amount of racial bias in the communities, the majority communities, the white
anyway.
Ethnic communities, and so on. Anyway.
Right, and I think that I believe that that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
So that for us to expect that kind of community to provide police officers who are unbiased and fair isn't going to happen, so I'm not sure how we're going to do that.
Well, I'm not sure.
Friend,
yeah.
Keith Notice, I would like to dwell on this for a moment.
Okay.
Was a fine, fine young man, very intelligent,
mm-hmm.
artistic, and he was actually working on some entrepreneur stuff with my son
mm-hmm.
when he was murdered by the Portland Police Department. And he was stopped, and it is in their police records, in their police reports. They initially started following him because he was a young black man in a hoodie driving his mama's car in a car that they didn't think he should be driving. And when he looked at them, he looked like he knew something they didn't know. So that's why they started
following
him.
I laugh, but it's not funny,
That is in the police report. In some kind of way, that made it okay for them to follow him, box him in, stop him, and within a few short minutes, shoot him 30-something times, execute him.
Uh-huh.
And I, this is in the City of Portland, and he's not the only one. We can go back years in Portland and find many, 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 many people who have been killed by the Portland Police Department.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid you're right. Yeah.
Ferguson. It isn't just Ferguson, and as you said, it's all over this country. So I think that our leadership, the City of Portland, the mayor, they need to get real. They need to be honest about what's going on. I don't believe that they don't know it, or they don't suspect it, but they don't make it a priority to deal with it directly, and they need to.
Okay, well, thank you for the call, and I agree with you.
Thanks.
This is a delicate subject. You know, several years ago, I was with a colleague, actually both of us professors at Portland State at the time, both of us bearded, by the way. We were having to be cruising through an area of Albina, and for no apparent reason, we were stopped by the police. Now, we're white dudes, all right? We were stopped by the police, and they acted like we were up to something, like we were buying drugs or something, you know, something like that. And it was a hassling stop, and there was no reason for it. And I felt at the time suddenly fearful, and I suddenly realized that the white skin privilege that I often unconsciously assume is pretty thin. The police, in fact, are agents of power with enormous powers, enormous ability to oppress, and the training that officers receive is crucial in that process, and the evaluation of who should or should not be a police officer is very important. One of the criteria that the police department generally use about selecting people to become police officers is, are they aggressive enough? And, of course, people who are veterans have an advantage and so on. Well, the problem is it's not just aggressive enough. It's evaluative enough. It's concerned enough. It's aware enough. It's the ability to think through a problem before you end up in a confrontation. And, I like the video cameras because even though they cannot prevent bad behaviors directly, indirectly, they end up doing that. Statistically, we see the evidence. So I'm a video camera fan for police. 231-8187. Who do we got? Mark, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Okay, well, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I love the words you're speaking. And I want to tell you that this bigotry and prejudice has been going on since I was a kid. Hasn't changed at all. It's just stepped up since the Patriot Act got passed.
I think you're right.
Yeah, it's a political agenda. There's actually a political agenda to this. It's not just something, someone's prejudice or a bigotry against a race. It's actually, there's actually a political agenda behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about not having enough movements today, and I'm here to tell you that I'm a member of Wolfpack. Have you ever heard of Wolfpack?
No, tell me about it.
Wolfpack is a nationwide effort to pass amendment, so it's an Article 5 amendment convention, anyhow, to take money out of politics, to reverse Citizens United, because basically if you follow everything back, why we're not being heard, the people are not being heard anymore, it all goes to the fact that the politicians on the national level aren't listening to us anymore, because they are being bought and sold by the rich people and other people who have a political agenda, and so they're not listening to us. So you can protest all you want, and it's not going to do any good if they're not listening to us. If they're answering to their donors and they're not answering to us, what good is it going to do?
Okay, well I think that's interesting. I think I'm almost totally in favor of taking politics and money apart from each other. And I do think that we've reached a point where, and it's always been the case, unfortunately, where money talks and you know what else walks. But it's really the case that it's gotten so bad, so offensive, and so unfair. We need democracy. We do not have it. And I thank you for the call, man.
Wait, did you know that Wolfpack has passed a resolution already in California and Vermont?
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's already passed in those two states, and we're passing it here in February. It's going to happen.
Okay.
So check out Wolfpack.
Thank you. Wolfpack, I got it. Thanks a lot for the call. All right, 231-8187. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. My name is Joe Uris. I'm sitting in for the two excellent, excellent broadcasters, Annie Haynes and Lynn Mullock, who will be back next week. I'm just filling in for them. I do a show on Tuesdays from 8 to 9 with Abe Proctor, and we deal with the same kinds of issues. And I think it's an important thing that you listen to KBOO. I think it's an important voice for you and an opportunity to talk on the air, in fact, during these talk shows, which are an hour long on 5 days a week. 231-8187, who do we got? Gene, you're on the air. You're on the air, man. Okay, James, you're on the air.
I would like to challenge you on your assertion that there is no left wing.
Okay, go for it.
It is my view that a right winger has a strict constructionist interpretation of the Constitution.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, Teddy Roosevelt, Hoover, Nixon,
mm-hmm.
Reagan,
mm-hmm.
both Bushes are all leftists.
So you're saying in a spectrum of right to left, the strict interpretation of the Constitution is a requirement to be a right winger?
Yes.
Okay, well, by that definition, I can't even argue with you. I mean, you've created a definition that frames the issue in such a manner that it takes it out of the world of real politics, doesn't it?
Well, see, that's the way the Constitution was designed.
Well,
the federal system was designed to be a specific entity. Any move to the right would be a confederacy. Any move to the left is a national form of government. It was a specific entity unto itself. So this idea that everybody has made things so complex, it's not. Imperialists have made things complex. In the 19th century, the liberals were strict constructionists. I am a liberal in the classical sense of the meaning. Those of you on the left are nationalists. You are fascist totalitarians.
Okay, man. Listen, thanks for the call. 231-8187. I got to do some business here. I got to tell you what's coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9, on Political Perspectives, we speak with Patrick Glovell about Forward 13, Waking Up the American Dream, a documentary about the foreclosure crisis. And that is a very real thing, by the way. At 9:30, we speak with Maui-based environmental activist Sam Small about the implications of this week's ruling overturning an ordinance regulating GMOs and pesticides in Kauai. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints looks at the choices facing the Obama administration as the situation continues to unravel in Syria. Then we explore the benefits of tax inversion therapy for consumers and the economy, and we continue coverage of the situation in Gaza. At 11 on Radio Zine, host Pear speaks with Oregon author Doug Matheson about his new book, Actually Thinking Versus Just Believing. It's a call-in show and on how to develop our opinions and the ways of viewing the world. All this and more, and again, I emphasize, the best music programming in the region, all of it on KBOO, 90.7 your FM dial. We're talking about what happened in Ferguson. We're talking about why I consider what happened to Michael Brown murder. And we're looking for your comments and your responses, pro or con. Jill or Jim?
Jill.
Jill, I'm sorry. Hi, Jill.
Hi. I have been thinking about Ferguson thing a lot. And one of the things I've been thinking is that how would it help if when white people saw police arresting African Americans or other minorities, we just stopped and witnessed it rather than walk away? And I realize in some parts of the country, Ferguson, probably there aren't maybe as many white people around to do that, but in Portland we could definitely do that.
Well, it's an interesting idea. You know, the police have a position on people observing them in action, where you're supposed to be, I can't remember, a certain number of feet back, and just a lot of ways to keep you from doing that.
But I've done it. A couple of times I've stopped when I've seen things, and they are definitely don't really encourage you to be around there, but don't we have the right to be there?
Well, I would think so. Whether you have the right, though, and whether you're going to be allowed to are two different questions. I also think, and I think this is really important, when we see something that is possibly wrong, in anyone's behavior, but most notably in police behavior, since they're armed and dangerous, we really do need to pay attention. We really do need to document things. A lot of us now have cell phones with a visual potential. We can take pictures. We can take even moving pictures. And I think we should use those devices. And by the way, this is part of the reason why I'm arguing that the police themselves would benefit in interest of fairness all the way around by having video cams on their person and in their vehicles. That solves the problem of alleged false accusations of police brutality, but it also solves the problem of citizens who are brutalized by the police. And I think your idea of stopping and looking at the police is a very interesting one. And I don't know the law in particular, but I think it would be an interesting experiment. And I think it's a great idea.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call. 231-8187. We're talking about the business in Ferguson. I want to emphasize that we have ample evidence in the New York Times. In the New York Times, in fact, on this last Monday, that statistically demonstrates the degree to which people in Ferguson are oppressed in terms of warrants issued and traffic tickets given. Many of them are totally bogus, and that there is a real community of individuals who feel and are in fact being oppressed by the police in Ferguson, and they are African American, and there's no denying that. And the whole system there apparently is a revenue system that only rewards the city for ticketing people and bench warrant issuing and so on. 231-8187. Who do we got? Mike, you're on the air. Mike?
Yes.
Go for it.
I can't argue with anything folks have said. They're all really good suggestions. I think what you just touched on, the revenue raising via fines for not appearing, it's not just Ferguson. It's endemic in the country. It's highly related to the basic tax for being poor. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a good issue that crosses class or crosses racial lines because it happens to all poor folks.
I think you're right, actually, about that.
Yeah, I think NPR did a really good a study of this thing, and they used rural Washington State mm-hmm. County and showed how that worked. So the other thing I'd like to say is that, you know, having come up in the 60s, I have a sense, and I've been involved since then, since the 60s to today, I have a sense that there is more organizing going on today. There are, that the consciousness has spread far beyond how it was in the 60s. That
That's
there
interesting.
Were some very, very large mobilizations at very short periods of time in the 60s, but by and large, you can find a lot more organizing happening today. But we're stuck at the same issue that we were stuck at in the 60s, and that is force, because eventually it comes down to who's got the force to make the change. And that's the only thing that these folks respond to. And that was clearly what Dr. King was trying to work out.
Yeah, and I think...
trying to come up with a nonviolent method of using force.
Right.
But that is the issue.
And I think you're right. And I was raised up as in my adolescence and older and early youth years to believe that one of the tasks we all face in trying to gain social justice is to always speak truth to power.
Right.
And I think that the witnessing process is enormously powerful. We never know when we reach the point where things can change for the better. So the struggle is really worthwhile.
Yeah. And we haven't worked out the solution. When people tried certain tactics in the 60s that were violent, there was a needed reaction to say, no, we're going to only be nonviolent. I do not think that we need to be absolute about anything. I think that we need to use nonviolence to affect change.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we need to understand what force is about, and we need to protect our bodies when they're threatened.
I think so. We need to distinguish between force and violence.
Yes.
And that's an important distinction. And I think that one of the things that happened out of the frustration around the Vietnam War and the inability of we in the streets to end that war, you know, the war was ended by the Vietnamese, really. The thing that has to be remembered is that the state has a virtual monopoly on violence. And when you try to engage the state with violence, you're most likely to lose.
That's for sure.
It's just pragmatic, never mind the ethical or moral questions involved.
Right. But we can also come up with there are a lot of strategies that weaken the power of the state. And that really is kind of the thing we need to be thinking about.
I appreciate your comment, and okay. I think sure. you're right. Thanks for the call.
Okay,
all right, 231-8187. This is KBOO 90.7 on the FM dial. I'm arguing again that what happened in Ferguson was murder, and that I don't care what the courts decide, because the courts are framing the issue in a way that is absolutely supportive of white power and dismissive of the rights of African Americans in Ferguson and in other parts of the country. So that's where I'm coming from, and I know it angers a lot of people, but the fact of the matter is, it's just what's happening, and I'm not going to deny the reality of it, and I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Marie, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay, I agree with you that there should be video on police cars and on the police themselves. They need to have video cams. To me, the big question is, and it's really two questions, getting those videos stored and reviewed properly, I think those could be manipulated as well. So I believe there's been so much manipulation. And in other words, maybe have a way of citizens to review those police videos. And then the second question is, how can we get that implemented? How do we start getting that law going, right? Start in Portland and spread it out?
Well, I actually have a suggestion. I think people should, you know, when city council meetings take place in Portland, at the beginning, right before they have their regular agenda, there's a time for what are called remonstrances. That is a time when citizens can get up and speak. And I can't remember the amount of time you get. Maybe it's 3 minutes, maybe it's less. But if there were a bunch of people waiting in line to remonstrate, who demand that that issue be on the city council's agenda, if it happened every time the city council met, you know, it's very possible that change might take place. But it takes energy and it takes time off of work for those who are lucky enough to be working. And it's worthwhile. I think the most fair thing to do, now that the technology is available, is to put video cameras on all officers in their encounters and on their cars. And I think it will make it, you know, it works for both parties. It makes it impossible to claim police brutality if it doesn't occur, and it makes it impossible to deny by the police that they have been inappropriate. So that's
thanks a lot. Good question. And then they also need to have city council on a video cam. What do you think of that?
I'm sorry, say that again.
I said thank you. Good ideas. And what about having the city council having a video of that we citizens would have access to the city council meetings?
Well, there are videos of all city council meetings that are broadcast on the community television.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, great. Okay, thank you so much.
Sure. Glad for the call. 231-8187 here on KBOO, 90.7 your FM dial. I'm Joe Uris. I'm sitting in for the excellent hosts of Positively Revolting, who will be back next week, which is kind of exciting. I do a show with Abe Proctor from 8 to 9 here on KBOO on Tuesdays. Who's next? Jesse, you're on the air.
Hello, Joe.
Hi.
Hi. I don't know if the cameras would work like we would hope that it would. I mean, the Rodney King beating was videotaped, and the cops was acquitted.
Mm.
And there's a lot of, you know, situations where things are on video, like the shooting of the veteran in White Plains, New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had the home monitoring system and all of that. It's all.
Oh, I remember that case. You know, yeah.
Yeah, it was video, and they shot the guy dead, and you know, on the extreme end, racism, from my experience as an African American man, is akin to collective sociopath,
mm-hmm.
and on the lower end, maybe collective narcissist, where there's no empathy or fit. You know, I'm like some sort of moving biomass with no connection.
I'm going to have to let you go. Listen, I'm going to have to let you go because you're breaking up. It's not, you know, it's all too right. hard to hear you. But I thank you for the call, man. All right, 231-8187. We're talking about Ferguson again, and this is probably the last time I bring it up, and I'm saying that Michael Brown was murdered. And I don't care whether or not, I do not care whether or not the so-called justice system in that region ends up indicting the police officer involved. I don't think I'm arguing wrong. I think I'm right. Who is it? Lori, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering if you'd go ahead and give a definition of first and second degree murder. So,
oh, I'm not a lawyer.
Oh, but you use the term. So I
okay, well, I will.
First, you know, the legal definition, and then maybe there's some problems in holding trials at KABU instead of waiting.
I catch your drift, and I appreciate
good.
It. First of all, this is an opinion show. Second of all, I have no power. Those are the two things always to remember about what's being discussed here. But first-degree murder in most states, in most circumstances, requires an intent to kill formed significantly before the actual murder.
Premeditated,
yes. Yeah, premeditated, in other words. Second-degree murder is murder that takes place, and this is one that I'm less clear on, where the person who commits the crime should have known that the action they were doing resulted in death. I'm not a lawyer, though, and I don't want to get into the fine lines involved. But I think if I catch the drift of your criticism, you think I'm being unfair, perhaps, in making assumptions here. Is that right?
I think we don't have the evidence. I think definitely to use a term like that before the evidence is in. And I do think you have a responsibility when you speak. If you say it's opinion, you also represent KABU, whether you want to or not. And you were ready to make accusations before we had any evidence at all about what
happened. Well, what do you think?
I think that's a very dangerous precedent that you're taking.
Well, let's assume your point. That is that I jumped the gun. Now we have the evidence, growing evidence constantly. We have audio tape. We have videotape. We have the situation of the autopsy. When do we, as people, get to make a judgment about the behavior of an officer in that circumstance?
I don't think the report from the investigation is out yet. I also did read that they have 12 people who say that they are witnesses that concur with the policeman. So I don't know. So
concur with the policeman in what sense? What are you saying?
That it happened exactly the way he says it happened.
Well, he's never said what happened. We don't have his testimony on the matter. We've never had him interviewed in a public context.
Well, that just goes to show you the difficulty, because I read that they had 12 witnesses who agree.
Where did you read
with
that?
His statements? Oh, on the internet, on the various
accusations.
So I think it's as good as the information that you have.
Well, we may want to argue about that, but let me be clear about what we do have. We do have a video. We have more than one video of the event. We have a witness statements from three separate witnesses, and we have now an audio tape. If it's confirmed, which I believe it will be, because the outfit that does the recording is saying that it happened exactly at the time that's indicated for the event, that indicates that there were a series of shots. Then a pause, then one shot, then another series of shots. And all of that resulted clearly in the death of the guy. We also have the autopsy, which shows that the two probably lethal bullets entered his body at the top and forward end of his skull. I mean, that's pretty cold. That's pretty clear.
Where was the other guy all this time? I mean, he was facing two men, one of whom is 6 feet four and weighs 290 pounds.
Yeah.
Which, to me, you can say, all right, that's a sweetie pie unarmed, but that's a little something to deal with. And if the video in the convenience store is accurate, this was an angry man.
Well, whether or not he was an angry man, whether or not he stole cigars, is totally irrelevant to what happened, because the officer, by his own statements, did not know that crime, alleged crime, had taken place.
It was also reported that he did, that it came in on his police radio. So at this point, we don't know whether those things happened or not. That's what all I'm saying.
Okay. I understand your point.
That it came in on the radio, and that he says that the guy was carrying something. You say a couple of cigars. The convenience store said it was $48 worth of cigars. So my point is not this happened, that happened. The point that I'm saying is Joe Uris does not know. And he is not, as he by his own admission, a lawyer. And this police officer should not be convicted on things that happened to other people somewhere else.
Okay, well,
I would just be worried about you making decisions as I would the police department. I really would, because you have no problem at all of just using anything and just hammering the, I don't know what happened, and I'm not going to give any judgment until I do. And another point you can make is sometimes after the judgment is made, it's suspect. So, but I'm at least going to wait and hear it.
Okay, I appreciate your point. I don't agree with you, but I do appreciate it. That's interesting. And I've had this response before when I made the accusation. And people say, well, don't call it murder. You know, murder is something I have a trial and it's all decided. I have no great faith in the justice system, no great faith in the district attorney in Ferguson, no great faith in the process. I have to say that. But apart from that, I have all the information that I have seen that I believe to be true. So I'm comfortable with my declaration. And I want to again emphasize, this is not a court. This is an opinion. If you go to Fox News or you go to MSNBC or you go to any other source today, you will hear the same kinds of discussions that I'm doing, perhaps with different positions. This is legitimate reporting, and I'm not uncomfortable with it at all. 231-8187. Laura, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think, yeah, it's great. Put video cameras on police cars. And what I also want to add to today's discussion is that there's another kind of police presence in Portland that I find really annoying, and actually a kind of surveillance that leads to the police state in a way, and that's that one is confronted daily with TriMet police, and I don't know if you've ever encountered them, but they can be kind of brutal. I think it's insane that we're policed when we ride the MAX. With the TriMet, it had come up with a system where you just pay and get on. Instead, we're trusted to pay, and then sometimes when you get off, you're checked. Once I was checked twice, and then I got into a bit of a scuffle with one of them because it enrages me, and I think that I've seen people be uncomfortable because of it. Mm. You have your fare, when people are apprehended and told to get off, it's a very creepy thing. You have dog police. They can also be very mean, the guys in brown suits. I mean, I think that these little police militias, if you will, lead to the bigger sense of police brutality, I think. And I resent it, and I think they're going to start possibly licensing cyclists, so then that's another way I'll be surveilled. And I think it prepares for worse things when we're harassed in those ways.
I understand what you're saying. There is a very complex set of problems about public transportation, and there are people who are largely, I think, homeless people and others with mental health problems that can create problems on public transport. I do not think the way in which it's handled today is the best possible way, though, and I agree with you on that. So, anyway, thank you for the call.
Thanks.
Yeah. I also want to add something here. I think when Portland went along with the anti-terrorism task force stuff that comes out of Homeland Security, I think a great deal of independence and privacy rights and so on were compromised in every city where that happened. And that now includes Portland, Oregon. Just wanted to throw that out for you to think about. And I do appreciate and welcome opinion that says to me, Joe, you're full of it, but this is where I am, this is how I stand, this is where I go, and I think I'm right. And I guess we have time for one more, or are we running out? Okay, Anansi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi, the woman who called in defense of the police officer had her information completely wrong. The most important point, I think, is that the police officer has refused to make a report of the incident.
Right. There's no incident report at all. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Exactly. And Mike Papantonio has got the full video of what happened in the store, and he paid for the cigars. So all of this trying to find the police officer innocent and claiming that nobody else should criticize this for this murder that happened is completely wrong. I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Well, I thank you for the call, and I thank you for your point. All right. Do we have time? I'm not sure where we are. We're out of time. I want to thank you all, and I want to thank you for the privilege, and it is a privilege, of being able to sit in for the excellent Annie Haynes and Lynn Mullick. And they'll be back here on Fridays, and I do a show with Abe Proctor from 8 to 9 on Tuesdays. Y'all stay tuned. Best in music, best in programming, best in the truth.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9 a.m. Coming up on Political Perspectives, Patrick Lovell speaking about Forward 13, Waking Up the American Dream. At 9:30, we speak with Maui-based environmental activist Sam Small about the implications of this week's ruling overturning an ordinance regulating GMOs and pesticides on Kauai. At 10 is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Followed at 10:15 by Flashpoints, looking at the choices facing the Obama administration as the situation continues to unravel in Syria. And then exploring the benefits of tax inversion therapy for consumers and the economy. And we continue coverage of the situation in Gaza. At 11 on the incomparable Radio Zine, host Per Fogering speaks with Oregon author Doug Matheson about his new book, Actually Thinking versus Just Believing. It's a call-in show on how we develop our opinions on and ways of viewing the world. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can remedy that by going to kboo.fm. Click where it says Donate Today.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor
Negative